A 20-year-old woman sits in a hospital bed, her kidneys failing, no health insurance, and doctors prescribing a protein-rich diet she can't afford. Kate Murray's body is shutting down, her athletic high school years now a distant memory. Then a friend drags her to a sushi bar. What happens next sounds like folklore, but it's remarkably real. The clean, fresh fish and rice don't just feed her, they begin to heal her. Within weeks, her energy returns, her depression lifts. She finds herself drawn back to that sushi counter, not just for nourishment, but for connection. The chef remembers her name, asks about her day, makes her feel seen. This isn't just about food anymore, it's about transformation. Years later, when Kate spots a sign for the California Sushi Academy, she makes a decision that would have seemed absurd months earlier. She'll learn to make the food that saved her life. Her journey mirrors sushi itself, a craft born from necessity that evolved into art, medicine that became devotion. That clean sushi flavor? It comes from mold. Instructor Zoran Lekic revealed the secret at a miso factory, Aspergillus oryzae, a fungus the Japanese call koji. In massive incubators, this mold processes thousands of pounds of rice, breaking down complex molecules and producing glutamate, the amino acid triggering umami's savory satisfaction. After the koji dies, bacteria and yeasts create acids and esters that build complex flavor layers. Both soy sauce and rice vinegar depend on this moldy fermentation. Without these microbial transformations, sushi wouldn't exist. What appears simple represents centuries of fermentation expertise. The parallel struck Kate. Transformation requires breaking down before building up. Sushi began as preservation, not cuisine. Over 1,000 years ago in Southeast Asia, fermented rice preserved fish for months. This method reached Japan around the 8th century as narezushi, where fermentation took months and the rice was discarded. By the 1600s, vinegar shortened fermentation to days. The revolution came in early 19th century Tokyo when Hanaya Yohei served fresh fish on vinegared rice, eliminating fermentation entirely. This idomezushi, recognizable as modern nigiri, was fast food sold from carts to workers. The 1923 earthquake spread Tokyo-style sushi nationwide as chefs fled the capital. Post-World War II hygiene regulations pushed sushi indoors, transforming it into formal dining. Arriving in 1960s America, sushi adapted with creations like the California roll, gradually introducing Western palates to raw fish. While Westerners obsess over fish, true connoisseurs know that properly prepared rice sherry makes or breaks sushi. At the academy, students spent days mastering rice before touching seafood. The process begins with selecting short-grain Japanese rice, washing it in circular motions without crushing grains until water runs clear. After precisely 30 minutes of soaking, the rice is cooked in an exact water-to-rice ratio. Then comes the real magic, transferring hot rice to a shallow wooden tub and seasoning it with sushizu, a mixture of rice vinegar, sugar, and salt representing each chef's signature. The rice must be cut and folded with a wooden paddle, not stirred, while being fanned to cool quickly. This creates rice with a glossy surface where each grain remains distinct, yet sticky enough to hold together. The ideal temperature is body temperature, creating subtle contrast with cool fish. For Kate, mastering rice preparation became meditative. The rhythmic motions, precise timing, and careful folding required complete presence. When she finally produced a batch earning Zoran's grudging approval, she felt connected to centuries-old tradition, transforming a simple grain into art. In Japanese sushi culture, the knife approaches the spiritual. Students received hand-forged Yanagiba knives worth $600, tools they would view as extensions of themselves. The willow blade's single beveled edge allows uninterrupted drawing cuts that preserve cellular structure, enhancing texture and flavor. Unlike Western knives that push through food, the Yanagiba slices in one fluid motion. Kate's struggles revealed the immense technical demands. Basic techniques like katsuramuki, creating paper-thin cucumber sheets, required hand-eye coordination and muscle memory developed only through repetition. When her unsharpened knives rusted overnight, Zorin's public criticism emphasized that knife maintenance reflected character and commitment. Japanese fish fabrication follows natural seams between muscle groups, preserving texture and maximizing yield. The philosophy emphasized motai nai, waste is shameful, and respect for the animal sacrifice. Prime cuts became sashimi, trimmings became rolls, bones became stock. For Kate, mastering knife skills became personal transformation. The concentration required forced complete presence, temporarily dissolving life concerns. Sushi offered a path to mindfulness through physical discipline. The final weeks explored sushi's transformation from Japanese specialty to global phenomenon. When sushi reached 1960s America, it faced resistance. Americans distrusted raw fish and found seaweed unappealing. The California roll, created in 1970s Los Angeles, solved this by placing rice outside to conceal the seaweed, with avocado and crab inside. This inside-out roll became the gateway, introducing millions to sushi, proving culinary traditions evolve through cultural exchange. Students debated tradition versus innovation. Zorin advocated mastering classical techniques before experimenting, like learning scales before improvising jazz. They studied successful fusions, like spicy tuna rolls, and controversial additions, like cream cheese, which traditionalists consider sacrilegious but have expanded sushi's reach. The core question emerged: is sushi defined by Japanese origins, or can it evolve while retaining its essence? They examined environmental challenges, bluefin tuna depletion, shrimp farming impacts, sustainable practices. For final projects, students created original preparations, respecting tradition while introducing innovations. Kate developed a roll incorporating seasonal local ingredients while maintaining traditional rice preparation and knife work, a synthesis of the cultures shaping her journey. As Kate's training neared completion, she reflected on her transformation. Beyond technical skills, she had changed her relationship with food, self, and craftsmanship. Her body bore the marks: calloused hands, burns from hot rice, new muscle memory making movements precise and economical. More profoundly, her mental patterns had shifted. The concentration required for sushi preparation developed her capacity for sustained attention. She now understood ingredients as entities with their own integrity, rather than components to manipulate. She had developed what the Japanese call shokunin kishitsu, the craftsman's spirit that approaches work as spiritual practice. Through shared struggle, Kate formed deep bonds with classmates and evolved from fearing Zorin to respecting his demanding standards as commitment to excellence. Most importantly, she had discovered purpose. Before sushi school, she had drifted between jobs without direction. Now she possessed not just marketable skills, but a vocation, work connecting her to venerable tradition and community. In our increasingly virtual world, the tangible craft of preparing food offers reconnection with our bodies, natural ingredients, cultural traditions, and community. Kate's journey from illness to health, aimlessness to purpose, isolation to community, all catalyzed by sushi, demonstrates food's power to transform lives. True mastery requires years of practice, but she had taken crucial first steps from consumer to creator. That transformation is available to anyone willing to approach their work with devotion, presence, and respect for tradition.